Chapter 25. The Fire of Souls. Tamari, ancient Egypt, was a charming, legendary place that the Alsatian had never seen, but attributed mysterious and inexplicable properties to it. He was a little disappointed, however, that there seemed to be only sand and stone here. Although the inhabitants of this land, he had already spoken to a few, told of prophecies, promises and supposed knowledge from ancient times, nothing of it was really visible and provable. People here called the gods differently, knew how to tell different versions of the story. The country, which would be known to many people of the future as the cradle of civilization, would still have a long way to go before the occupations and conflicts would end. Some things were similar to each other, but still the male couldn't help thinking, the more people I meet, the less of them believe my version of life. The less I believe their version of life. It's a shame I don't have the time to explore Egypt. It would be nice if I could bring the knowledge I have gained to Gaja to tell people the truth. Also, the two hermits had not given much evidence of themselves. They gave the male a few nice words of wisdom on his way. But what were they supposed to bring him? Why had he spent 3 days watching water evaporate? Only to sharpen his senses and to learn that there should be a way to influence the course of time? What was the point of all this? And then they sent him away, on his own. The hope for help had largely failed to materialize, and so it was up to him to strictly follow the meager directions. After hours of thinking and pondering, aware of his hopeless situation, the Alsatian came across a small village. The village, yes. So I'm on the right track, he thought, walking past a few small buildings and finding himself in a small market selling slaughtered animals with flies swarming around their carcasses. An unappetizing smell filled the hot, dusty air and made the dog feel sick. Ow, what a stink! He grumbled, covering his catch with the yellowed scrap of cloth he was wearing. Could only he perceive this foul-smelling stench, or why didn't people cover their mouths? A woman who had braided her hair into Rasta braids approached the Kisar, my lord. Come and take something to eat. You look hungry. I have the best bread, juicy fruits and much more to offer. For one like you, I will make a good price. I promise. But the male dog did not react. On the one hand, he was not very hungry, and on the other hand, the smell of rot spoiled his appetite. Besides, he thought to himself, he didn't want to take root here and be stopped. He should rest here, although he was not tired. Handotep had told him so. As he strode wordlessly past her stall selling sticky pastries, the Egyptian woman called after him again, "Please, my God, do not ignore me. Be good to me and do me the great honor of serving you." But if Chenro was a god, could take whatever he felt like anyway, why did people try to do business with him? Did people want to get money from everything and everyone? Sure, the inhabitants of the barren desert needed it, like all other earthlings. The thought of the fact that in Aramaria, Somogeja and Alsatian Iowan used as a rule no means of payment, but the world nevertheless functioned, made the dog proud. Somewhere in their development the Anthros must have turned differently and had not let themselves be infected by the greed for money. The woman got up, ran after him and dropped to the sand, grabbing one of the dog's lower legs and clinging desperately to it. Chenro was unexpectedly slowed down and looked down at her seriously. What do you want from me? Leave me alone. I have no intention of buying anything, he shouted angrily and shook off the human woman, who then laid her head in the sand sobbing and whining slurred words. Unimpressed by this, the soldier continued walking without paying attention to her, when suddenly more and more Gajans approached him and stopped near him. He got the impression they were watching him, wanting to ask him for something, requesting help. When the Alsatian had been surrounded from all sides, he stopped and turned in a circle. As he did so, he observed their silent stares and noticed that it had become very quiet, a cluster of people had formed around him. All the others who were walking around the market also stopped their movements, but did not come closer. As he became uncomfortable, the dog asked tensely, "What do you want?" "Let me move on, do you hear? Get out of the way. Surrounded by people. Prevented from leaving. Slowed down in every development. A cornered animal." However, the circle consisting of people of all ages and genders did not move, and Chenro continued to capture the gazes of the participants. The ring opened and a small, black-haired girl stepped out from between the people, walking towards the shepherd. With a confused look, he wondered what would happen now. When the child then stood in front of him, looking up at him in awe, he looked down, built up by contact, at first seriously, but then more and more calmly, serenely, expectantly. "Who are you?" asked the weak, delicate child's voice. The dog got down on his knees and thus went to eye level with the human child. "I'm Chenra, Chenra Gejays," he said, smiling. He realized that the small human was holding a wooden doll in one hand. The figure was painted with dark colors that chipped at the edges of the form, which was similar to that of an anthrocanid, and looked quite worn. "What are you? You are not like him, not like Anpo. Why?" was the next question. "Well, my little one," the interviewee began, "I am not like Anpo, because I am not a jackal. I am a dog. That's different." "Why?" But the Alsatian could not answer this question, but that was because he did not know himself. Why was he actually a dog, not another creature? Did the architect have a relationship with these animals on Gaja? Yes, at least this question the male could finally answer himself. He remembered how he had taken Joliad to Gaja and introduced him to the architect's dog, Arki. The person, with whom the sovereign was no longer connected, lived a strong affection for these animals. Chenra was aware of this. But now he lacked the connection with his creator that would have enabled him to ask him why. Gejays put his head to the side and shook it slowly. "I don't know, my little one. That's a very good question, though. I'm not a jackal because the gods just wanted me to be a dog, I guess. They'll have their reasons why I didn't turn out any different." However, the girl shook her head in turn and held out her small hand to her counterpart. "No, it was not decided by the gods. I can explain it to you differently. Come with me," it then spoke. This seemed strange to the male, because the child could not have been 10 years old and seemed very determined and adult in this situation. It was also strange that no other Gajan said anything about it. One stood still and let only this girl speak. Gejays took the human hand, slowly stood up and looked around. Suddenly, people began to kneel down as if they were paying homage to a lord. First a handful, then more and more. "What is the meaning of this? Who is she?" he thought to himself and did not take his eyes off the little person who was smiling and pulling him behind her. "That girl. I know her from somewhere," the Alsatian continued to think, but couldn't place it. The moment the two had passed through the ring of people, everyone went back to their normal activities as if nothing had ever happened. They stood behind their stalls, selling and haggling loudly. Gejays walked slowly after the children's feet, not daring to let go of the hand holding him. "Who are you? Where are we going?" "I have two," he spoke. "First you will find peace, Chenra." In the next moment, their silhouettes dissolved and disappeared against the backdrop of the marketplace. When the Kisar blinked, he found himself in an unreal scenario, surrounded by stars and planets. He was no longer in Tamari, no longer on Gaja. He was floating in space, and to his amazement, he could breathe, felt his limbs, and felt quite light. He fidgeted, turned his armored body in different directions and asked, "Little girl, what's happening here? Is this a spell? Where have you taken me?" The echoing reply of an adult, calm voice rang out, its origin impossible to pinpoint. "I am Aria, Jaja, Ianaya, the first she-wolf of Alpha, Vol." The hovering man opened his eyes in astonishment. "What?" he asked. "That's completely impossible. I can imagine that this surprises you, but, no, my son, it is not impossible. I thank you for making it possible for me to go to Gaja." The thought of the situation in Bulmer flashed in the dog's head. He had put the Sword of Amarok in the hand of the fox statue and put down the Ispasetka, which allowed him to travel to the past of Gaja. The spirit of the goddess had entered the weapon and had helped him survive the journey through time. "So you came with me?" he asked, looking around. "But where are you? And why didn't you show yourself to me earlier? Where are we, and what's all this about? I have been near you all this time and have seen the teachings you have absorbed. You have the gift of knowing your origin yourself. I saw it in the glow of your fur markings around your eyes when you were in the temple of Yenebian."
"You!"
exclaimed Chenra. "I saw you at the temple. Now I remember. Out of the corner of my eye I saw a little girl. By the gods!" The voice laughed softly. "Ianaya, what are you up to? Why are we here?" "Your story, dear Chenra, now experiences the culmination of all your knowledge. And also, your Creator reads in this work, your life, the greatest wisdoms of His own. Everything you cannot and should not know. But you have already experienced things where the knowledge of their meaning would throw you off course. It's my book. It's no longer him writing it, it's me. I would know about these things and the great meanings. Don't you think? I'm going my way alone. The architect is welcome to read along, but he's out of a job now, if you know what I mean. That you write this book alone, only you believe. He, your maker, the architect of your world, is actually reading along all the time. He can still intervene at any time. You are not the omniscient narrator, he still is. In disbelief, the male dog inquired, if that's the case, why doesn't he do it? I'll tell you, he can't. An invisible force straightened the dog and let his paws find support on invisible ground. He can, but why should he, when you have taken him on such an educational journey? Isn't it better for him to watch you, study you, and thereby learn new things? No, objected the sovereign, that is not true. I act independently. He has nothing to say to me. He has released me. You are mistaken. And I am made to bring awareness to those who turn to me, so that they only have to open their eyes. What was she talking about? The architect could continue to intervene in history? How could that be possible? The human had turned away from Gay Jays, his protagonist, thus giving him his own decision-making possibilities. His incomprehension could have been seen in the Alsatian, but he was here alone. Alone with the voice of a goddess who was none, according to everything he knew by now. Inwardly he was stunned. Had his creator lied to him? And if so, why? Was he also forging a secret plan? You and I are writing this book. Yes, Chenra, I spoke. I could, whenever I want to, finish it all. But I think you can show me more things of what I want to know. Where do you and I come from, and how did we get together? I asked myself how this dog could not notice that we were still riding together on the Vulpes Lupus Canis. He did not anticipate that he had just met Aria. He experienced things that he did not write down himself. It was his action that changed the path, but I created the situations. It felt to me, with a touch of arrogance, as if this was a game on my part. I set the circumstances and evaluated whether my character would be able to handle them. I always directed everything to create the environment for my dog, so that he could get knowledge, which he then passed on to me. It's almost time, Chenra, the voice spoke, not answering her counterpart's questions. Time for what? Talk to me. He asked, blinking and suddenly standing on a balcony that must belong to a multi-story building. It was a bone-chillingly cold morning and light frost turned the metal pipes of the structure's parapet into white bars. The male's breath was visible as he leaned over the parapet watching and recognizing a parking lot with cars driving around. It was clear, he was on Gaja, not in his world. What kind of place was this? It didn't look like Tamari here, and the temperatures didn't match it either. Apparently, the she-wolf still had divine power and had brought him here. But almost more important, in which time was he now? He looked at the parking lot and noticed that this place was a hospital. He already knew this type of building from the human world. A few ambulances, emergency vehicles were parked here and there was a constant flow of people in and out. When the German Shepherd turned around, he was standing in front of a glass access door to a hospital room. He wanted to open it, but his hand slipped through the handle as if he were a ghost. He was surprised, but immediately passed through the glass, which was not an obstacle. He went inside and noticed that the room was unused. The bed was not made up, the light was off, everything smelled very sterile and since there was no one here, Chenra could not make sense of what he was doing here. Although he decided to leave the room as quietly as possible, his intention was abruptly interrupted when he tried to step through the door of the room and it promptly burst open. Startled, he backed away a few steps as two nurses hurriedly came running into the room, one pushing a stroller in front of her from which came the cry of a baby. Apparently, the people did not notice the stranger's presence, but simply walked past him. One of them opened the balcony door, which the Alsatian had just passed through. Since he could not be seen, he could not touch anything, he had to be a ghost. Surely they would not be able to hear him either. This he tested and spoke, "Hello girls. I hope you are having a good day. You don't look like it, if I do say so myself." He was to be proved right, they did not hear him. "Well, wonderful," he grumbled, "now I'm probably dead and don't know anything about it. The cold is fitting." Then he called the name of the mother wolf several times, but she did not respond. Whatever he was supposed to do here, he was doomed to be the silent, idle observer. Dead or not, a ghost without any authority or means of intervention could only watch and listen to what was happening. "Yes, let's put him down there. We don't have room here for that kind of thing." "Thank the management," said the chubby woman, who rolled the stroller and finally maneuvered it ungently over the threshold of the door frame. The vehicle was parked on the stone floor and the baby's sniveling cries were ignored. "What do we tell the mother?" asked the other, who was fiddling with a notepad and a pen and seemed to be hastily recording entries. "We are not equipped for premature births. He has to go to Detmold to the premature infant ward. She can then take him in her arms there once she's allowed to go." Gajes observed the unreal situation. The women seemed overwhelmed. The child's cawing stifled their voices, while one was willing to accept pushing the little human outside in the cold and leaving him to fend for himself. She then continued, "The noise is unbearable. Let's leave him outside. Let him scream there. We don't want the patients to complain." "Hey, you can't be serious." The dog ruled, but that too went unheard. The nurses quickly left the room without looking back or closing the balcony door. Further, this little person suffered and cried as if there was no tomorrow. And that should be the case, would they just forget him here, the male thought to himself, as the voice sounded wheezing and exhausted. He stood next to the stroller and looked into its opening, which was lined with light blankets to provide the child with makeshift protection from the cold. Tentatively, he tried to push the blankets aside, but he couldn't touch them either. He bent down to at least be able to see the little person's face. Whoever this baby was, it was not in good health, as the observer could tell by the bluish glow of its skin. Its lips were purple, and its eyes were squinted shut. A fatherly feeling came over the soldier as he tried, despite everything, to gently stroke the child's forehead with his furry hand. Strangely, the wailing stopped for a few seconds, as if the infant had perceived the fur on his skin. "Is this a coincidence?" the Alsatian asked himself in thought and was absorbedly contemplating the human, when a soft, feminine voice snapped him out of his musing. "This, dear Chenra, is not just any human child. It is the architect, who at this time is only a few moments in this world," she spoke. It was the wolf mother of all, who had ignored him before, but now suddenly addressed him again. "Ianaya?" the male asked, looking up at the sky. "What are you saying? That's him?" The Alsatian looked back at the stroller in disbelief. "This is the architect? By now I should be used to dreams and mystical stuff. But every time I wonder what's actually real," he admitted to himself. "This boy is the third son of his mother. She has already lost two of them before birth. It doesn't look good for him either. He came to Gaja much too early," the she-wolf spoke now, "and has very bad chances. The reason for his crying is a broken groin on both sides. The cold does the rest. Oh dear!" the dog exclaimed. "What am I going to do now? I can't move the stroller. I've tried that already. The sheets are very light and can't possibly protect it for long. I'm not even a breeze, I'm a ghost. He will freeze to death if we can't get him into the room. How can people be so ignorant and heartless, Ianaya?" The anthro's despair was visible as he stroked his small forehead again and tears made his eyes shine. His body was like the breath of wind and accordingly he could have little effect on the surroundings. "Whatever happens, whatever will become of you, I will not let you die like this. You haven't done anything to anyone. Even if we are not good to each other in the future, I will not be responsible for your death. If you really care about him, even today," Aria spoke, "then connect with him. Not only can you go through walls as a spirit, Chenra, but you can also go into his body. It's the only option you have if you want to try to save him." "It's so cold out here," the sheepdog thought to himself and took heart, putting his hands on the cloth blankets and concentrating. "Don't be afraid, little one. I'll help you," he whispered, dissolving his outer appearance so that it could unite with the body of the Gajan. Again, the howling of the human child ceased and his breathing now became quite calm and shallow. Almost, it seemed, the boy fell asleep when, only a moment later, the balcony door opened, a nurse lifted the small, gaunt body out of the stroller and said, now you're going to another hospital where they can help you. Poor thing. She ran back into the room while Chenra, in the form of a spirit being, warmed the boy, soothed him, and thus prevented him from giving up his life before it could properly begin. He felt that cold and pain were not enough to make this young, innocent life pass away. Only then, when there would have been no more room for warmth in his heart, would the dog have gone away from him. Only then, he firmly believed, would the light of life have given way to hopelessness. His unshakable courage was to pass on to the human and help him to survive this situation. His inner voice, which the infant could not understand, kept speaking to him in his mind, "Hang in there. We will make it. I know you don't want to give up. You mustn't, do you hear? I'm with you and I'll take care of you." A short time later, the ailing body was put on a helicopter to be taken away. Throughout the flight, the dog's spirit hummed soothing sounds, managing to put the baby to sleep. "Soon we will be there. You don't have to be afraid. Death cannot harm you as long as I watch over you." The images of these events ended abruptly and a wink from the Kisar was followed by another situation in a new fiction. Here it was now different. The dog was no longer in the body of a baby as a protective spirit, but recognized that he was standing in an apartment. Slowly, he took a few steps forward. To the left and right, closed doors appeared, which he looked at briefly, but left them closed and did not go through them. Directly in front of him was a room whose entrance was open. It was quite large and should be the living room of this apartment. The male had visited the architect on Gaja a long time ago, so he knew that these could not be the rooms of its maker, but he recognized the style of Gajan culture from the fact that there was a television on one wall. When he tried to touch a wooden support pillar, the dog's hand slipped through it. He noticed that he still could not touch anything, could not move anything, but he was not surprised, given the events of the vision before. Chenra walked a few feet into the living room, noticing light coming in through the windows and a person snoring on a brown cloth sofa. "You? You're here? This isn't your home at all. What is this place?" he wondered. The male quickly realized that the person on the sofa was the architect. Although he was wearing all his clothes, he was sleeping peacefully. A small analog clock stood next to him on the living room table. However, the dog could not read it, because Alsatians were not familiar with the concept of time in the form of clocks. "Strange," he spoke to himself, "if I am part of you after all, shouldn't I be able to read this thing? I haven't thought about it until now." He was right, since he knew the human world exactly, he should also have been able to read a simple analog clock. However, the time and its measurement had no more meaning since the meeting with Farhad. Chenra had simply forgotten to read it within an instant. Why was the architect sleeping on a sofa, still wearing all his clothes? Had he spent a drunken evening and was sleeping off his drunkenness? Not that it's the first time, but, no, it's not that, it's something else, the Kisar reflected, walking around the room, looking at the furnishings, pictures of people he didn't know adorned the walls, furniture he didn't know from the architect was here. He was startled, wincing, because a medium-sized black dog with prick ears was lying on an armchair. Although he did not move and made no attempt to attack, Chenra had overlooked him at first. The fact that this animal also lay there, dozing with open eyes and taking no notice of his fright, conveyed to him that no one would be able to hear or see him here either. "Oh man. Damn, you scared me," spoke the traveler. "Well, who are you? For a sheepdog you're a little too small." He bent down and stroked the animal's head, not feeling its fur on his fingers. "Well," he sighed regretfully, "I would have liked to pet you, little one. But I'm afraid I can't. Which brings me back to the question, what am I doing here? Just watch how differently people and dogs sleep? Or am I supposed to maybe recognize the beauty of this still life?" He gave the feral dog a perplexed look and inhaled to let out a loud sigh as the taste of the air suddenly seemed bitter to him. A soft "huh?" escaped his snout and his sense of smell, which had been acting strangely sensitive since the meeting with Farhad, guessed it, somewhere in these rooms there was smoke. This was not a good sign, since the human was sleeping. The Kisar ran back into the hallway and unceremoniously walked through one of the closed doors. He gradually looked around the rooms of the dwelling, recognizing sleeping, unfamiliar Gajans in them, all the while wondering what he was doing here and how he had gotten here. When he stood in front of the last room and walked through the door, it took his breath away. Everything in this room was black. Nothing in here could be seen. No furniture, no furnishings. No silhouettes, no schemes. No light, no air. A black wall, warm and impenetrable. What the? The dog wondered, and then added, aghast, it's on fire. Damn. It's on fire. He ran out of the room and noticed that veils of white smoke were now spreading throughout the apartment. They hung in the air like flying scarves and hovered at eye level. At the latest now it was clear to the male that he would experience a very dangerous situation and he assumed his task would be to sound the alarm. But how would that be possible, ghostly as he wandered? He rushed to the architect and called out to him, "Hey, come on. You have to get up. There's a fire. You don't have time to sleep. Move it." But the man remained motionless, after which Chenra turned to the quadruped. "Hey you. Come on, get up. Wake him up. There's a fire and you need to make your presence known. You are in great danger." But the black dog did not move either. In denser clouds of smoke, Gay Jays walked around the room, up and down, not knowing what to do now. Although he was calmly nervous, he could not intervene because, after all, he was not able to communicate. When his back was turned to the room, just as he turned around again, the person who had been asleep seconds before was walking quickly around the living room. "Robbers? What's going on here?" he asked, addressing the dog, which continued to lie on the armchair and was happy about this attention, as if it had nothing serious to do with it. With wide open eyes, he looked around, glanced left and right, then toward the entrance. His visibly confused gaze searched for an explanation for the smoke and louder, rapid breathing of a Gajan could be detected. Chenra could not perceive the man, nor how the shouted, "There, the first room. That's where it's coming from. Go see." But the architect opened the front door, became frantic when he realized that the smoke that was collecting under the ceilings of the rooms was leaking out through the door. So it could not come from the outside, but its source had to be inside the structure. Gay Jays guessed the reason and made fun of the human's actions. "Yeah, wise guy. From in here. Not from outside. Come on, get a grip, you idiot." Chenra was now as tense as his human counterpart, but had to watch idly to see what would happen next. The Gajan became more hasty in his actions, but now, with pumping heart, opened the right door. He tore it open, stood before a black wall of heat, and involuntarily took a deep breath of it. "Shit, damn it!" he shouted, coughing hard. He quickly closed the door again and set about waking the other occupants of the house. In the next moment, Chenra noticed that the architect had a human child by the hand and was leading it quickly, followed by his dog, out of the living room and into a bathroom. A cool room with fireproof flooring. Tile. Not bad. Not so stupid, thought the Alsatian, as his creator instructed the child and his dog to stay in the bathroom and not open the door again. He went back to the living room, ran from room to room, and sounded the alarm. Three more people came out of the rooms and began to whirl around in panic, putting on clothes and stumbling around. No one seemed to know what to do now. The Kisar could only observe the situation while those present were beside themselves, running through his appearance. Attempts were made to suppress the smoldering fire with primitive means, pots and bowls full of water, but it was not successful. "Leave it. It's no use, you can see that, can't you? Get out of here," shouted Gay Jays and opened his eyes. Quickly, the other people outside made their way to safety, knowing that they had lost the battle against the flames. These expanded and spiraled higher and higher until they had taken over the entire space of their origin and expanded to other areas. Although someone else tried desperately to resist the heat and smoke and throw a burning mattress through an open window, he too had to give up, to bow to what the laws of physics had prepared. This person was also able to escape outside, after which, however, the predicament was not yet resolved for everyone present. A situation arose for Chenra that seemed strange and uplifting at the same time. The architect stayed in the building and ran into the bathroom, where he had put the human boy and the feral dog before. He hurriedly ran past Chenra as the house filled more and more with flames and thick fog. The man coughed again and pulled open the bathroom door. In this room there was only a very small window, which was placed at a greater height than he was tall. Through this he handed the little boy so that he could be received by someone from the outside. He, too, had now been rescued. The Alsatian stood in the bathroom doorway and saw the desperation in his maker's eyes. The scrutinizing glance to the window, back to his dog, no, he could not get him through the opening without hurting him, possibly badly. The soldier had correctly interpreted these thoughts when he took them from the Gajan's overwhelmed, questioning expression. A sad look from the anthro followed as he continued to observe the situation. The human sat down with robber, leaned his back against the tiles and put his arm around the animal. He stroked it and began to cry. Chenra had a lump in his throat and he felt deep compassion. He knew that what the human was about to do would end badly for him and his dog. He felt a strong, inner connection to him and sadly let his tail hang. The flames crackled and small, smoldering particles floated through the rooms. They reached the hallway, bringing with them their roar that quickly consumed the oxygen. The air now became warm and bitter in the bathroom as well, and visibility clouded over. "Ah, my robber." The human spoke in a quivering voice, snuggling up to his black mongrel dog. Tears streamed down his face and his protagonist knew, this man was ready to die, together with his companion. The fire, which in the meantime had sought its place in almost all rooms of the house, was now also causing smoke to rise in this room and would soon turn it into a dark, stuffy hell. Chenra turned around briefly and realized that all the others had left the apartment unharmed, were already free and safe. While they had not forgotten the last of the group, they also had enough to do with themselves and their own shock. The Alsatian watched his creator as he broke down inside, pressed himself against his pet, stroked it, caressed it and began to sob bitterly. He, too, was struggling with tears, sighing in suffering, and trembling in his spirit. For a brief moment, Gajay's thought about what it would mean if the architect were to die here and now, the history of Vulpes Lupus Canis might never have been written, depending on the moment in time he was in. On the other hand, since the novel had been written, the Gajan had finished the book, he must have survived. Or did what was happening now take place after all this? Had the story of the fox, the wolf and the dog already happened? What year was it on Gaja right now? What was this feral dog? Had the architect already lost his shepherd dog Arky and got another one? The male dog was unclear what all this was about, what time he was now witnessing and why he had to watch all this. Was it reality or just a dream that the wolfish goddess wanted to show him? What was he supposed to learn from it? He could not change anything, could he? No, I can't do that to you, no matter what happened. After all, you made me. You are my father. I can't just leave you here to die alone. I will stay with you. After all, I promised you when you were born. And as the Kisar, I keep my word, he thought. While the human cowered and howled, inwardly closed with everything, his protagonist concentrated, walked up to him and squatted in front of him. He sighed loudly and looked into his tear-soaked eyes. He could not do more, he thought, since touching him and helping him up were not possible. Squatting in front of the young man, the sovereign caught sight of the jackal-headed Egyptian god Yanapu, who had appeared beside him and placed his hands on his shoulders. The strange anthro grinned slyly and whispered to the other canid, "No, dog, you won't get him. I've been waiting for him for so long. And today, finally, I will take him. You have denied him to me as a child, but now it is time." The sovereign asked incomprehensibly, "Why? What has he done to you that you want to take him? Look at him. He has done no harm to anyone. Don't you see the love for which he must continue to exist?" "Even then," the Lord of the Duat began, "his life should have ended. You should not have been there. While your compassion may honor you, it is not right. You should not interfere in my affairs again. He is coming with me. Even here, in this time, you don't belong, dog." At this, the Alsatian looked deprecatingly and shook his head. "No." He spoke ironically. "Not today." Intuitively, he put his hand under the chin of the Gajan and raised his head. Suddenly he could grasp him, lift the head. He did not reach through it, as through many other things before, he could touch it. He looked again into the teary eyes and the human's facial expression suddenly changed from one of despair and sadness to one of questioning and shock. "Not today," Gajay's now shouted loudly and clenched his jaws. His master now did the same, as if he could see him, he clenched his teeth and changed his face again. An aggressive face revealed itself, which was almost equal to that of his own hero. The eyes of the two crossed for what felt like an eternity. Again, the human stared into the shining eyes of his Alsatian, gathered courage and felt how their souls connected again. The crackling of the flames died away and time seemed to run more slowly. The surroundings receded into the background and the focus of the two was on the other. An astonished look of the Egyptian god followed and he exclaimed out angrily, "No, dog. He's mine. Don't you dare." The noise returned and the progress of time returned to normal. Suddenly the person jumped up and shouted through the window, "Is the hallway clear? Can I get through?" The jackal's determining grip loosened, and his hand clawed firmly into one of the human's shoulders. He growled grimly, "No." Another man's voice replied, "Yes, it's free, try it. It should work." This was enough for Chenra, and also for his maker, as a sign of departure and their breathing quickened. "Come, I will give you the power," spoke the sovereign, standing up as well, and could hear the earthling's heart beating loud and fast. The male dog grabbed the other human shoulder, emotionally strengthening the man with it, who now grabbed his feral dog and was ready to sprint off. Yanapu emitted a barking sound as the human tore away from him. The growl of the ancient canine mingled with the crackle of flaring flames and loud growls of a god betokened frustration that the shepherd had once again thwarted his plans. "You'll pay for that, dog." Still shouted Yanapu, but had to let the human go, accepted this and promptly vanished into thin air. The man carried his dog across the room like a suitcase, with only his left hand, ran further into the hallway and held his right arm protectively in front of his face. Gajaz walked beside him, his hand still resting on his shoulder, constantly thinking to himself, "Come on, we'll make it, together." At the threshold of the entrance to the apartment, the architect tossed his animal over it and also stepped over it, so that they were both freed. Clean air flowed through the man's airways and loud coughing filled the scene. Stumbling, the Gajan and his robber made their way to safety and it was certain, Chenra had once again given his creator the power, saved him one more time from the certain death he had already resigned himself to. Now nothing more could happen to him, because all who were in this building, from whose openings now jet-black clouds of smoke came, had survived, by the early warning of their friend. Exhausted, the man dropped into the grass, a few meters from the source of the fire. He joined some of his comrades in arms, not taking his eyes off his faithful, ferocious dog, which was running around without a leash. The heart was beating strongly. Breath fluctuated and was shallow. Pure effort ended. Life, no living on. Chenra, who had also expended quite a bit of energy, stood a few feet away from his maker and watched the first flames erupt from the roof of the building. Here, he knew, there would soon be nothing left standing. The fire department and an ambulance had already arrived, and the Alsatian overheard talk of preferring to let the wooden structure, covered with roofing fall, burn down in a controlled manner. Apparently nothing could be saved here anyway and every drop of water only delayed the inevitable. The shepherd dog walked over in relief to the human he had just saved from his death. Again, he sighed and then spoke, "I will take care of you and never leave you. Then as now, I promise you that I will not leave you hanging. Anubis can go fuck himself. As long as I live, you will live too. If I have to, I'll fight him. He won't get you." Again, he put his hand gently on the human shoulder and together they watched what was happening. "Well, I guess that's it. It's all gone. You'll be all right. I'll be there, from then on and forever," the Kisar promised further. "Thank you, whoever you are," the Gajan suddenly spoke, as if he had perceived his protector. The latter looked at him puzzled, blinked unconsciously, and was torn from the scene. Once again, he found himself floating in space and was now confused again. What had just happened? What were these situations and when were they? "Ianaya," shouted the male. "Now you have seen that some realizations in your life have been waiting for you, too," sounded the voice that was very familiar to him. "Realizations? What happened there? When was that? Was that real, or did I dream it? Did he get to see me?" "Now," she spoke, "you had the opportunity to save your creator two more times. You have been at a time when your world did not exist yet. Neither you nor I existed on paper at that time. Your creator didn't even know yet that this world would eventually exist. But events inevitably led to its creation." "What do you mean?" Another blink and the dog found himself on sandy ground. He was back in Tamari. The Alsatian looked around and found that not a soul was here. The girl, the wolf goddess in human form, was gone, As was the village. Well, wonderful. And where the hell am I now? He asked himself. When his upper body had finished a searching turn, suddenly the little girl with the Anubis figure stood in front of him, as if by magic. Wow! He exclaimed. Damn! You scared me. The child grinned. Did you see that you and the creator both condition each other? You saved his life several times. He would have died if you hadn't been there. And not just once. The dog pondered, but that would mean that the Vulpes Lupus Canis already existed at that time, unlike what you said. It must have, because how else could I have saved him? How did the fire happen? The little person looked intently at the Anubis figure and spoke, no. What you saw there was many years before he started writing the book. It was not only by saving his life that you made the writing possible. The fact that you were there, and he lost everything, and felt you there, made him write that book in your honor. You could say he did it out of gratitude. A character named Fox was his inspiration. But he did not gather the courage to write down your story until your souls were united in this difficult situation. Whatever you may feel about him because you think he is domineering, remember that he is infinitely grateful to you. The traveling dog understood what he was told, but he could not grasp it. If he had not experienced this timeline in Tamari, he would not have been able to save the human. If he had not saved him, he would never have come to Tamari. All of this was very confusing, simply impossible. Again, a paradox opened up here. I also found that very overwhelming. So I stretched my back tiredly, sighed and wiped my eyes. I had to admit that the way of the dog was very fascinating, but his experiences helped not only him to gain knowledge, but also me. So now I knew that he was my forefather, I was born one day and made his existence possible, which in turn saved my life several times. For his part, he now also had to understand that he had once saved me when he had traveled from Egypt's past into the future to witness the most severe blows of fate in my life. Yes, I had perceived him, at least when my home and all my possessions went up in flames. For me, however, he was only a presence, had no form. Chenra presented himself to me as a kind of energy that enabled me to focus my courage and strength, to grab my dog and survive. That, and I believed in it, was the reason why the most important of my three protagonists should have been a canid, a sheepdog. Fate welded me not only with my pet at the time, but my personality with these creatures in general. I have seen many things in this history that I did not know existed. I must admit that by now I no longer find it strange that you can show me the past. Although I myself am further back in time than I ever thought possible, I have come to accept these paradoxical things. What I don't understand, however, is that you as Ianaya, like me, are a creation of this person. At the beginning of the story, you knew nothing about him. How is it now that you could show me the lineage of his time? How is it that you know about him now? The male crossed his arms, expecting a plausible answer. Chenra, the cloaked area now began. You are not in this land for nothing, not in this time for nothing. That you put the sword in its place, brought me to this place in Bolmer, to this statue, made me come where I wanted to go. I wanted to go to this world, to Egypt, to gain knowledge, to strive for fulfillment, and to bring to you the deep connection between you and your creator, our creator. Never have I met him, but I believe in his existence, as you have always believed in mine. Showing me the connection. I guess you succeeded. What would have happened if I had let him die? You couldn't have, the girl spoke, hugging her god figure. As you know, having written it yourself, time repairs itself. You must know best that it is useless to force a change of the timeline. You can change the path in the short term, but never the destination. Again, the dog had to think about it. Should everything he was going to do be completely pointless in the end? What she was saying could not be true. However, she was right in one point. He himself had taught Amarok that time cannot be changed permanently. Certain situations could be arranged differently, but the outcome of everything was already determined before it occurred. I have walked so far, traveled through time, he spoke. Even though I cannot prevent the book from being written, I can try to improve the individual situations and the future lives of my friends who have died. Their deaths simply cannot be something predetermined. There must be some other solution. I never intended to forget the Vulpes Lupus Canis, to not let my world come into being. I just don't want them to die. Death can't seriously be the goal of everything. They should live together in peace. That's the kind of story the work was supposed to be. I don't know if the architect agrees with me, but I think that a love story would have been in his sense, no, in ours. The child looked up at the dog and shrugged her shoulders. Well, I don't know what you want to do. This land has brought me closer to many things. I will stay here and finish my life as a mortal. I have seen enough, experienced enough. I have spent all my energy now. I thank you for making this journey possible for me, Chenra. We have gone through a long time together, but this too shall end someday. Thoughtfully, the anthro tilted his head to the side and agreed, so if you want it, you can stay here. Is that the reason for your childlike appearance? His counterpart nodded delightedly, but did not answer. I understand. Now I have a lot to think about again. Thank you for showing me why the architect made me a dog and not another animal. I'm afraid I must run on, towards my destiny. Yes, the wolf goddess then confirmed, you will surely meet with destiny. Now that I am no longer a goddess, having discarded these abilities, I will not be able to help you. I hope you will find your way anyway. The last insight I could give you was to show you a way to inner peace and understanding. I hope that worked. The male nodded silently. So I'll go back to my village. Have a good journey, Chenra, sovereign of Alsatianaya. May time be with you, she spoke now, waving briefly and turning to walk back through the sand with her small feet. For a moment, the anthro watched her go and began to internally review what had happened. What was he to the architect now? If they depended on each other, why were they fighting each other? For what reason did man not want Chenra to change history permanently? For what reason was this book so important? Then the dog soldier set himself a smaller goal, what I can change, I change. What I can't, I won't. Although I can't say whether all this will be successful, I will try anyway. He who gives up without trying is truly stupid. Then he went on and turned his head to the sky. His eyes had not changed their appearance, but the look seemed cold and petrified. Seriously, he spoke directly to me, I understood that we belong together, still. Nevertheless, I'll give anything to make you regret your decision to kill my friends. I'll get them back, somehow.